and Hashem would lead a person in a particular direction, let us say because of his good deeds, in order that he should be rewarded. And if he's done bad, Hashem will lead him in a particular direction in order that he should suffer from the bad deeds that he's done. And this is appears to be contrary to Bechira. So we've got to understand that there are reservations and limitations with regard to Bechira and how it works. But we must understand something else. And that is, when we speak about reward and punishment, reward and punishment is not that a person does something good and Hashem decides to reward him. It's not like with a child, where the child does something good and so you give the child a chocolate. It's far more sophisticated than that. The way it works is that when we do a good deed, that deed itself produces its reward. When you put in a seed into the ground, and you put in a seed from an orange, just take one seed and put it in, that seed produces a tree, and that tree produces oranges, and it goes on producing oranges year after year, and it comes only from one seed. You say that you put in a seed in the ground and then something else happens. Hashem makes an orange tree grow. It's not like that. It is. Hashem has created the seed in such a way that if you put the seed into the ground and look afterwards, afterwards it will produce the orange tree. And so also, if you do a good deed, what it does is it creates its reward. Am I making myself clear?
Very clear.
Now, if you've got that clear, then I'll take you one step further. If you can understand that, then you'll be able to understand the next step. It goes even beyond that. We are accustomed to think in very physical, material, concrete terms. When we think of our new shoe, we think of the bricks that were laid nearly 20 years ago that produced a building, all that is going into now to change it, to renovate it, to change it, take down walls, put in walls. And so the shoe will turn into a shoe in 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 weeks' time. It will turn into a shoe. Now, there is another type of building. When we were doing the physical world and the spiritual world, I explained to you that the essential difference between the physical world and the spiritual world was that the physical world is concrete and the spiritual world is abstract. But it is completely abstract. There is nothing there that is concrete. Again, this is something that is difficult for us to understand because we have been trained by everything that surrounds us to regard as reality only that which is concrete, that which one can perceive with one's 5 senses. Now, it isn't really like that. Let us go back to our example of last week and of 2 weeks ago. The play King Lear. We go to the theater and there we listen to the play of the Shakespeare's play King Lear. Everything is concrete there. The seats we sit on are concrete. The material from which the theater made is concrete. The stage is concrete. The players are concrete. Their words are concrete. It all belongs to the physical world. It's all concrete. What is the reality of it all? From where does it really come? It comes from the mind of Shakespeare. He isn't alive anymore. Comes from his mind. Is that concrete? That's completely abstract. But it is there where the reality lies. And so, the reality of all realities is abstract. Hashem is abstract, completely abstract. When here upon earth we do that which is right, what we are really doing is we are building, we are creating, and we are building, and we are building our Olam Haba. And our Olam Haba is completely abstract. But that is where the reality is. But that is what we are building. Now that is already more difficult to understand than the previous step that I took. So I've taken you through three steps to explain to you what reward and punishment is. Any questions or that on that, or can we go further? Yes, Sima.
I'm sorry, the Olam Haba, is it in Hishtash Alut? Is it on the way to earth, or is it?
Now, when we speak about the Olam Haba, even there, we speak about Techiyas HaMeitim, but the Techiyas HaMeitim is not yet the Olam Haba. The Olam Haba is that these words, these terms, change with different rishonim. They use them in slightly different senses. But we've just got to be clear in our minds what we mean by these words. Olam Haba is where it is completely spiritual. It's abstract. It is no longer concrete. Where the body is also spiritualized. That is our idea of Olam Haba. What's worrying you, Sina?
I'm just wondering, the way things finally appeared on earth is after person dies and then they come back, but the other is even that which follows, that beyond.
There is nothing that is beyond Hishtash Alut. It is, we go from degree to degree, and on the Olam Haba is also established from going higher and higher, and that is the idea of the Yotzah. The Yotzah is that each year the soul goes to a higher level. But it is still established, it is still there. But that will come to the question of established, will come to stone. Now, yes?
Just a more question, I think that I'm understanding what the last time made it, in that things aren't reward and punishment, things are more cause and effect.
That's right. If you just leave it to there, then you've got the first step.
Okay.
The first step is that it's cause and effect. So if you leave it to there, then you've got that first step, which is good. I went two steps beyond that. How long have you been coming to this year?
4 or 5 months.
For 5 hours to get to the first step is very good indeed. All right. Now, behidei sidero don baruchu shekol inyonim ashetipo bohem bichirosa shel odom yagiu lehonia batnua abichiris es hakelches oheim ba'usa ashir ba'madrego shechokat lohem. Now, what he is going to explain here is that Bechiro is not merely a right that we have to do what we like, but Bechiro is a koach, Bechiro is a power. And a power does something. Now, when the wind blows and we can't see anything about it, can't see the wind blowing, it blows and it breaks off a branch from the tree. So this is a power that the wind has. The wind has various other powers. The wind can make a windmill go round, and the windmill that goes round provides power and can produce electricity. And what is this wind? It's not solid. It's not liquid. What is it? Cannot see it. Cannot smell it. You really can't even hear it. You can only hear it when it's passing through other concrete things. You can hear it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to hear it at all. Yet, this is what it does. Now, what the Derech Hashem is saying now, that the Chiro is a koach. It is a power in the person. And so he says, Hashem has arranged it so that everything to which the Chiro is applicable, then that causes an influence. It influences certain things according to the degree that Hashem ordains. V'hainu, kilo masov levadom yeni'um, elo afilu diburo v'afilu makshavto. It's not only that his deeds, his actions influence, but also his thoughts, his speech and his thoughts influence. But the extent to which that influence takes place is limited by Hashem, who gave it boundaries in his own wisdom. It will become a little bit clearer later on, and I shall come back to the sentence. And now, paragraph 6, Bor, the Omnom, Acharat Nuah Bechiri Simoshech Bechoach Nuach Muchracha. Kicheven Shehis Noah Hu Akochas O Elyoni Mitzad Odom, Hina Yazru Vi Noah Hu Vat Nuah Ativis Es Ashforim Amishtav Shlimelev. Now, when we, through our Bechiro, do something, then it influences those kochos above. If you've got your sheets with you, it would help considerably. You remember, this is man. So, what happens now is, man, through his deeds, actions, through his words, through his speech, and through his thoughts, influence these sources. They influence these sources. Now, and these forces, again, come down and have an influence on the world, on him and on the world. Then, after he, this koach of the chiro, of free determination of will, then there follows a compelling force. Because since he has influenced these koches lo elyonim, yes, these spiritual forces, since he has influenced these spiritual forces would now in turn influence down here below. Then naturally they will have an effect on things through his Ishtarshurus that are down below. Now I'll just read to you what the Mesilas Yeshorim says about that. Then it goes into much Kiddush. I'll read it to you only in the translation. when Hashem created the first man, he took him and he caused him to pass before all the trees of the of Gan Eden and said to him, "See how beautiful and praiseworthy are my works, and all that I've created for your sake. Take heed that you do not damage and destroy my work." To summarize, a man was created not for his station in this world, but for his station in the world to come. It is only that his station in this world is a means towards his station in the world to come, which is the ultimate goal. So, what he says, Hashem says, take heed that you do not damage and destroy my world. So man, by evil, can destroy this world. How does it destroy it? Anything wrong that he does has an effect and goes right back to the source. And then in turn, that source has the influence and influences that which takes place down below. Now this is a principle that he establishes here. The ulom yesh b'chol ho'inyonim ho'eile chukim protim rabim kefi ma'ashe gozru ha'chok mo'yeno va'ome katoso ha'yens noes libriyoso. He says, and all these things have, they are detailed points to them, and Hashem has arranged it all in a particular way, in the same way as in the physical world, that if you sow a sequoia seed into the ground, you know that an elephant won't rise up from that seed. It won't produce an elephant. It will produce a tree, and it must be a sequoia tree, and it can't be any other tree. So whatever deed we do, whatever word we utter, whatever thought we have, it creates something. Not for every person, it's not the same for every person, because it depends on the intensity of it. So if the intensity is less, it produces less. If the intensity is greater, it produces greater. I'll take this again with you in a moment, but I want to go a little bit further. He says, now God has created in this world evil, good and evil. So, good and evil are two forces in the world. And these two forces which we find come down to the world, these two forces are found in the spiritual world. And they come down to the physical world. V'hine sidro chokmoso izborach et hakuchas hanivdolim shorshe hanivroim shezocharnu v'seder uvitechuno shehipal bohem kefi mashe shayokh bohem tikun v'kilkul. Now, Hashem arranged it so that these different powers and forces are the very roots of everything that has been created. V'hainu she'imotze bohem matzov tov v'lo tov v'amitas tuva matzov yiyye she'yu v'achona le'ol v'ol ponov izborach v'yoy Elohim. And everything is, in the last instance, is dependent upon Hashem's will. And the expression that is used is the light of the face of Hashem. The Hofko, and its opposite is, that is for good, its opposite is, Shetichsar mehem alkona hazos, that there will be wanting in things this light from Hashem, V'yis'ale mehem, and it will be hidden from them, V'sodos tikkunum bashporim hu ratel fuhem v'hefek v'hefek. He says, and whatever we are able to create, for whatever those forces create in this world, it depends. It can be for good, and it can be for evil. I'm trying to just give you some idea that we can get closer to what it is. I'll give you an idea of the physical world. In the physical world, if you take the seed that one sows into the ground, all the preparation one has to do for it. You first of all got to clear the ground of rocks and of stones. After that, you've got to clear it of weeds. Then you've got to plow it up. Then you've got to make furrows. Then you've got to put the seeds into it, cover up the seeds, then water those seeds. Then it starts growing. You've got to look after it as it grows. And so much can go wrong in the way. It can be attacked by the Mediterranean fly. It can be attacked by all sorts of insects. And it's got to be looked after all that time. And only after it has been watched and nurtured, then it produces its fruit. So, what is really the source of the fruit? It's the seed. But it's dependent on what we have done. If we sow the seed and we don't look after the tree, we won't get any oranges, or the oranges will be very small, and they will be sour. So it depends on the way we have done it. That ultimately influences it. Now, in the same way, there is the source of everything that is here below, is in the spiritual world. That source is abstract, and it becomes concrete only through the process of Hishtarshanus. Gradually it becomes concrete. Shakespeare's play starts off as something completely abstract. You can be quite sure, before he puts it down on paper, he has the whole play in his mind. And then he puts it down to paper. So it goes from the abstract, it goes to the physical, to the concrete. But its source is in the mind. And so the source of everything that is here upon earth is in the abstract. It's the root. The root is in the abstract. Now, I'm going to give you another example of it. When Rabbi Ozol the Great was on his deathbed, he was in pain, in great pain. And his students came into him, his disciples came into him, and they wept. Rabbi Akiva laughed. And they said to him, "Why are you laughing?" And he said, "I was always worried about our master. Everything went his way. His wine never turned to vinegar. His honey never went off. His oil never went off. He had no difficulties in his parnos in making a living. Whatever he sowed, it grew, and it grew well. I was concerned that he was losing his olam habo. He was getting paid for everything that he did. He was getting paid here. Now that I see that he's suffering, now I know that he's not getting paid for it. That now, for anything wrong that he did, that now he's being paid. And that wasn't paid that he got, that wasn't paid." Now, what is difficult to understand here is, how could Rabbi Akiva have said that he was afraid that his master was being paid for the good that he had done? The good that he had done, the payment is on the Olam Habo. On the Olam Habo, can one understand what kind of payment it is? There is a verse that the Gemara deals with in Isaiah. It goes like this. Ume'olam lo shomu lo he'ezim. And we, from of old, we have not heard, nor have we been able to perceive. Ayin beruazo Elohim zilotacho yase lemachakeilev. No eye has seen what Hashem has put aside for those who wait for Him. So the Gemara explains this verse to the Inner, that when the prophets prophesy, and they prophesy consolation, and they prophesy pleasure and happiness that a person will have here on earth, they prophesy for those people who have associated themselves with Talmidei Chachomim. Those are the people for whom they prophesy. But the Talmidei Chachomim themselves, and the Talmid Chachom is the person great in knowledge and great in piety, and there is no disparity between the knowledge and the piety. For those people, no eye has seen, excepting Hashem Himself, what is in store for them. That means that we have got no idea of the real reward. We've got no idea. The Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us, that one moment of joy in the Olam Habo is worth a whole life of joy here upon earth. There's just no comparison to it. So we've got no conception of what it's all about. Rabbi Elazar of Gadol, the teacher, the master of Rabbi Akiva, with all his greatness, to him this verse applies. That what is in store for him, nobody could ever see. How could Rabbi Akiva think that he was being paid for the good he did? He was being paid here upon earth. Now, there is such a thing as being paid for what one has done, good things what is done, one is being paid here on earth. But it's ruchnius, it's completely abstract. How does it work here? First of all, let me explain to you when a person is paid for his good deeds that he has done. Everything has got to be paid for. Now, when a person has done, let us say a person has done wrong and lived an evil life, and he has done some good. The person doesn't believe in Olam Habo. The person doesn't believe in afterlife. He's not going to have Olam Habo. So what Hashem does is He pays him for what he has done. He pays him here upon earth. What does He pay? He pays him that which He Himself has created, which man himself has created. That is the second and the third level of my explanation to you on what schar is and what reward is. So He pays him here upon earth, but He pays him from what He has created, which is now in the abstract. But as it makes its way down to earth, it becomes more and more concrete, until that when it reaches earth, it assumes that form that accords in its entirety with what takes place here upon earth. Am I making myself a little bit clearer?
Yes, sir.
So that is the way it works. And this is what the Derech Hashem is explaining to us. Whatever we do influences the forces above. But then the way it works is, once it's there, it influences those forces, then those forces influence everything here upon earth. So it comes back again. But I just want to point out to you at this stage something that you must bear in mind. Those forces exist. The forces exist when man is born. So there is a force that is the shoresh, the root of the being, of man. We call that person, we call that force the sun. So that is a force that exists. That is there as soon as man is born. Now, what happens is, he can influence that force, and that force influences back. But which doesn't mean to say that there are not inherent forces which influence the man whatever he does here upon earth. So there is an inherent force there, and the man becomes what he becomes from what he is here upon earth. Let me again try and explain it to you. We've got our physical body. Now, you'll get a person, two people, got very good physical bodies. The one becomes very fat and unwieldy. The other preserves the perfect figure. The one person becomes ill. The other person keeps very healthy. What has caused this person to become fat and unhealthy? He's eating too much. He's eating the wrong food. So look what's happened to him. The other person is careful, doesn't eat too much, eats the right food, looks after himself. So you can see how each person has influenced his own well-being. And yet, there is a force in the human being that gives him life. Still that force in the human being that makes him look what he looks like. The one is tall and the other is short. Those forces are still at work. So there are two things happening in human being at the same time. The one is what he himself creates for himself, and the other, there is still a force that makes him what he is. Gives him his potential, whatever he is, gives him all that. There's still that other force. So, I'm afraid that it is far more complicated than it appears on the surface. Whether it is the hero, whether it's all these forces that have an effect on us. But the important thing that he's saying is that whatever we do has an effect on the roots, and that again has an effect on us. There's just one further thing I'm going to say to you before I leave that. The man's deeds and his words and his thoughts have an effect not only directly concerning himself, but also have an effect on the world, not only with himself. When Shakespeare, when Beethoven works out in his mind a symphony. Now, when he worked out these symphonies, he was deaf. But he was stone deaf, couldn't hear anything. So what was the point of making those symphonies? Why did he do it? He heard those symphonies. He heard them. He had it all in his mind that he could hear those symphonies. He created them and he could hear them. He put them down, he put the score down on paper for others, for generations to come. He couldn't even hear it himself. So, what does he do? He created something for himself. He could hear it. He created it for himself. And at the same time, look what an effect it had on the rest of the world. So, it works so with us also. On the one hand, what we do affects ourselves, but there is no such thing that what we do affects only ourselves as an effect on others too. Whether it is good or evil, whether it is in deed, in word, or in thought. Now, a deed is stronger than a word, and a word is stronger than a thought. But it is possible for a word to be stronger than a deed. It is possible for a thought to be stronger than a word and stronger than a deed. But that depends. That depends very much on the person. Now, that is really what he is saying to us. And I know this is all very difficult, and I'm trying very hard to finish this chapter, because once we finish this chapter, we go on to things that are simpler. I must tell you that I don't find it difficult. But my wife tells me it is difficult, and I take her word for it. But what I've tried to do is, by giving you the physical examples, the concrete examples, to give you some idea of what the spiritual world is and the effect it has on us here. Yes, Lisa?
Yes. I remember a few years ago you spoke about Olam Haba.
Yes.
I understood it that it's not something linear. It's not the end of days that we usually come to understand
yes.
it. But even when we're going for it, there's we get a feeling of something that has to come of Olam Haba.
That's right.
So I want to find something that is like our understanding of Hashem that's beyond space and time, that it's continual, and it's just what we're creating is our space in it when we get there.
Well, we recreate our own Olam Haba. That's what we do. We've got to try and understand it in abstract terms. Now, one can do it. It's a question of training. And it's a question that if you are Jewish, it's much easier. I told you about from different field, that when he was asked when he was giving to the world his theories of logical positivism, he was asked, why, how can you think so abstractly? And I had no idea that he had any Jewish blood in me. And he answered that this must be in my blood from my ancestors who were great Talmudists. He was a goy, but a proper goy, and yet this was still in him. So it is this thinking abstract. You can see to what extent that the Rambam says that if a person even has a thought illustration of Hashem in a physical form, he says, "Ein chelik ha'olam habo." That person got no chelik ha'olam habo. Even Ezra seems to agree with that. The writer says, look at it, it's right that the person that there is, one mustn't have any illustration even of it. He said, but to say that a person hasn't got Olam Haba, he said that's not. So there is a difference of opinion amongst the Rishonim there. But at least you can see how far it goes, that the Rambam is prepared to say, hasn't got Christ, and how does it work? Because the Olam Haba is abstract. And if a man takes that Olam Haba and feeds it in a physical form, needle can egg it needle. Physical form, if you are so won over to the physical world that you cannot even adjust yourself in thought to a spiritual world, ein chelik ba'olam haba. So it's all very, very tense and intense. But at least we've got the rival to help. But you are absolutely right, I did say that. You're absolutely right that there are just moments that we can get. There are great moments, but we can capture those moments. They only last for a moment. And Jovid HaMelech says, Miyali v'har Hashem, who can ascend the mountain of Hashem? And then he said, "Me your kumbi the kumkusha," and who can stay there on that holy place? It shows that it's possible to reach there, but not to stay there for long. But those flashes we can have, and please, no leap of faith with me. That they certainly, and those flashes come only through very hard work. Now he says another, the next paragraph, paragraph 8, is a simple paragraph, believe it or not. The Torah Shetele, he says in paragraph 8, and it's necessary for you to know, he may. Afal pisha be'emet sivas kolin yonei atev b'chol mokam shehem peirik bein b'kokas bein b'sol deseyem, he may he hev honet p'mechit barach k'moshe zuchadla. He says, after all, that the reality of it is that the cause of the cause of the cause of any good that there is upon this earth is, so to say, the light of Hashem's face. Now, of course, we have pre-speaking, this is in abstract, this has to be an abstraction. The light of Hashem's face. It is only a term that we use to explain some power, that a power of good that emanates from Hashem. But that is the expression we use, and we use it in our prayer, Simchat Torah, Bless us, this is the last bracha in the Shema Ne'eva. Bless us, all of us, as one, with the light of your faith. And that is a power that emanates directly from Hashem. And we ask Hashem, and that is a power that can be only a power of good. So he says that the Siba Torah B'chol Mokum Shehu, Helen Orosa. He says that the cause of evil is only the absence of that. There is nothing positive in that. It's not any eminence comes from evil. Evil is only the absence of the open air. And that is a very important statement that he made. Omnom, le tel yetoa ro'oda baruchu b'shem sibo mamash lichlola b'ritzroto. He says the only thing is that when we speak about the goodness of Hashem, then we describe Hashem in a certain way, that is the ol ponecho, the light of his face, but when it's the evil, we don't describe a sibo mamish, we don't ascribe a cause. Ki omnam eina korish boruchu v'yachet shemo alaro, because Hashem will never associate his name with evil. Ela helem olo, but the absence of his light, the hester pono, and the hiding of his face, the choshev lechshor is low. That is to be considered the root of the evil. The absence of God's face, the light of his face, and his hiding his face. Ki zehu sifoso be'emes, because that is, in truth, the cause of the evil. The zeh al tzad ederato. And what it means is, it's the absence of goodness. So where there is the absence of good, then there is evil. I don't want to take this any further for the moment. All right, if you want to ask me any questions on the safe, I'll be pleased to give to you.
The last statement that you have made, that the absence of good is evil, but it seems to me that evil is a very
big force.
I don't like to use the word positive force, but it certainly is a force. You can feel it sometimes, you can see it in people sometimes, besides just the happenings from 1933 to 1945, I mean, that was not just an absence of good, it was a very positive evil. I understand that part.
I have to take it a little bit further with you. It goes on then to say, so first of all, that the absence of Hashem's love, that is the evil. But then he goes on to say, I'm just trying to give you an example of what he means to make it a little bit easier. I'm going to try and explain it to you like this. And that is going on these last few days about the question of drugs. And the president has put aside $8 billion to fight drugs. $8 billion. And why should it have come to this? Now, this is an evil in America. Why should it have come to this? Did the government create this evil? The government is going to send them good things. Their hospitals come from the government. Their social security comes from the government. Drugs also come from the government. You can't say that. What happened? All they did was they neglected it. They didn't worry about it. They would neglect it, and once they neglected it, then it started. And now it is something very real. And it's something that's got to be fought. And it's got to be something that we've got to contend with. But the government didn't create this. But it is there. Hashem didn't create evil in the usual sense of the word. What it is, that it hasn't got is it's the absence of us, the light of our Hashem's face. That is to this part of the fortress. It is absent. But once his absence isn't there, then he's created it in such a way that there is a force that works out on his own. And that is a verse that is in which I know that it creates. Hashem forms light and creates darkness. Also Shalom makes peace, who very well draw and he creates evil. And then it goes on to say, the evil I show you shall go, I'll still do this with you again. He says, and the root of this is cloud, kilchel, shalom. These are many different forces. From which were elements, a chiseron, and deficiency, and all of these evils. They imagine a day and a nephew, they imagine a day and a goof, the whole creation, the back of the sun, whether it concerns the body of the soul of the person, whether it concerns the body of the person. He says, and all of this is the result that God, the light of God's face, so to say, isn't there, and he hides his face. Not that he doesn't see, not that he doesn't know, he just hides his face. Now, in the Torah, we've got this idea of experience, where, we've had it a couple of weeks time in the Torah, where Hashem says that if you are going to say that anything in this world takes place by chance. There isn't a God, isn't here. It's not a question of good or evil, whether you do good. It's just a question, this is how things go. And that is the way that we see it today. Even Jews seem to be in the vanguard of this. They will speak about what happened in the world and something the Germans caused it, as if we had nothing to do with it at all. That it was nothing that was wrong with us, it was only wrong with the world. So, Hashem says, if you will say that it is by chance, that is the way it goes. Hashem says, in that case, I will withdraw myself, and I will hide myself. And if I hide myself, then you get to see it by chance. So it doesn't mean to say Hashem doesn't know what's happening, but Hashem hides in himself, and his influence doesn't emanate down into the world. And then it just goes on as it is. To show now that eventually he comes up against the same wall, he can't go any further, and then he has to go back. And Hashem says several times in the Torah, several times, and if you will still say it's by chance, then this will happen to you. And if you will still say it's by chance, then this will happen to you. Several times. Until in the end, Hashem will bring you back. I think the very last thing he mentioned in the circle of you, that you will sell yourself for slaves, and none will want you. Sell yourself for slaves, and none will want you. And the point of your word is to say, that will be the best. And that is what happened in Germany. When Jews wanted to be Germans, they didn't like to be Jews, and they called themselves Germans of the Malay persuasion, and in the end, and send himself to the goal, and in the end, the goal rejects him. Isn't that true? That was the, actualization of the purpose of it. And I think I told you the story with my son from Israel that he had recently. He was asked to preside over the symposium. The symposium consisted of non-religious Jews in the main, not religious Jews, or by the tutor or non-religious Jews, Jews who were just at the fringe of becoming properly Jewish, and speculators. And one Jew got up and asked the question, why would the Holocaust take place? And before he had asked, he told me his mind was working furiously as to how to give this person an adequate answer. And before he had a chance to tell it, a woman in the audience stood up and she said, I am a Gentile, and I would like to answer that question. And she took her Bible, and she opened it, and she read from the book, and said, this is what happened. So obvious. So the question, how did it happen, would have been, why doesn't it happen? That would have been the question. If there wouldn't have been a Holocaust, you would say, then why didn't that? Then the Bible must be wrong. Then the Torah must be wrong. That is the question. But that it happened just goes to prove the Torah. So, if I show so to say, how is his face? Of course, there is evil that is created. But I show has given that power that evil can be. But it comes not from Hashem the evil, it comes from the absence of Hashem being there when the people come. I've tried to give you as much as possible concrete examples of all these things to the people. All right, you've got a few more questions here, please.
This is back
to you,
but I'm not
I don't understand how thought can be so important in the circumstances in which we are. So it is the influence of a person. But a thought is a very powerful force. That we've got to remember. Now there are people that can first want to think a certain way. But I'm not speaking about that. I've given you the example that I've given you of what thought is. If we see a big power station or a nuclear station, where was the birth of that nuclear station? That's where it was. So look how powerful it is. Yes, as a result, there are thoughts that have never been realized. But look how powerful it is. But that's the thought that created it all. Oppenheimer may never have taken a brick into his hand. But it is that that produced nuclear power. Whatever it is worth. But it was thought that had left the mind. The mind is so strong.
So if the thought had a physical consequence.
Yes. Then that's the importance of the thought. If the physical consequence is not the physical consequence, then that's the importance for one of the things to own. You see, we can only adjust to it in a physical sense because we're living in a physical world. And this world is called over my field. It's the physical world that we are in. So this is the bottom of it all. This is the physical world. So everything has got to adapt itself to this physical world. It woke up. Where it came to us in the form. of two parts of hydrogen to one part of oxygen in a breath, he wouldn't be able to do anything with it. He wouldn't, couldn't act with it, he couldn't drink it, couldn't do anything with it. So I say that it comes to this world, it comes to us in the form of water. And then it adjusts itself to this world and we adjust ourselves to it. So that is the only thing that those of us thought is, a greater thought is. My wife and I were looking at this the other day. We heard about the woman of Mrs. Peterson who created settlement street for children. She was not a millionaire. Created Christmas in her mind. Now, the world could have done it without it. Just as well. It's a different purpose. But look back after that 30 years. Now there are thoughts that are very, very important. And those thoughts are simply damaged. So a person like the Chofetz Chaim with his thoughts and the thoughts he had for the Jewish people, and then the uncle goes to the Hector for the Chofetz Chaim, and it was arrested in London, I felt the world class in England to listen to that Hector. That was arrested for the Chofetz Chaim, the uncle said, and he died in September 1933. He said that terrible things are in store for the Jewish people. That as long as the Chofetz Chaim was alive, they couldn't have acted. If he's love for the Jewish people, he's close to the Jewish people, that couldn't happen. And only the battle would be taken away. We must know what it means, that he's the culture, what it means. So he's the scandalous of war.
Yes, okay, the Rav said last year about the kind of the Rav had a dream. Are these also considered the fact that he had a dream when he sees that and he just did it? So that the people who have certain ideas, like the leaders, who have the fact that.
Yes, you see, sometimes the person's got a thought. That it is so much in the unconscious that it's not going to check it to the conscious at all, and he's not aware of it, that it's going on. And it can have it to be projected into consciousness through a dream, that can happen. But you've got to be careful that not all dreams are true.
But the Rabbi says something about the kind of vision where someone got it and he said he was dreaming.
Yes, the Rabbi is a different thing. He just explained to somebody what his idea was. But this person said he knew on doing it. Yes, he said, I am dreaming, but I'm not sleeping. That he was thinking. But I told you that thing. And it just his way of explaining things. Now, I just had a message from New York late this afternoon from the Jewish press, and I said, if anything came in from San Jose, when he left us from San Jose, I said, not a single one. Now, I don't know whether your letters got less, or whether they haven't reached it through labor days, possible that there wasn't a labor base. I'm afraid it's too late now to laugh if you haven't written it. There was a pretty good
opportunity.
Well,
it's finished.
Well, everyone will. It's finished That's all right.
I thought they were introducing having any kind of product. A lot of the stuff is just the ones that are in the world.
There's nothing wrong with that.
That's the end of the
That was exactly what he was speaking about. It's such an opportunity, you see. The importance of something in the hope that this would stir
I would just like to point out an issue that I don't think is ever addressed. And this is the fact that one time, a long time ago, I was sitting on the side, and I was sitting in a room. The very small number of women, of which four of them had gotten out of marriage with living daughters. And I, especially on such a broad aspect, said it, I have never in all my years, and I have spoken to other people, have never heard rabbis sit up and speak about this subject. And what I am aware now is there are actually shelters that Orthodox Jewish women from very battered situations in New York, for instance. And it is a very important problem. And I think there is a major problem with this. It was never brought out in the open and that says men are not taught that they cannot be survived. And women are not taught that the minute a man does it to you, you get out, period, there's no second chance, there's nothing, you get out. And that's really been taught that it's just this is going it's happened for generations. It's provoked your husband diving on home and show him by it. And this was the aspect person that I would have written about. If I had thought that it was one million articles,
you see, you are confusing. You are confusing two completely extra separate issues. By combining them, you're weakening them. That's a very dangerous thing to do. By combining them, say there's this and there's this, you're weakening them. There are two separate issues that must be attacked separately, not fusing them together. And that it leaves with its own power. Dealing with one thing at a time. Otherwise, it just doesn't matter, you see. But dealing with that exactly, what husbands who don't give their lives one, just take away take away the attention from that onto something else. And that's exactly what these people, there are three people, whom I know. I don't know who's writing this article. I don't believe this one person is writing this article. But I know that there are three people who are backing this. And that they are putting into it is unbelievable. But they believe. And when it comes to backing of wives, to me it was a really great shock the first time I heard it. And the first time I heard it was only a few years ago, it was only about 96 years ago. But it was the first time I heard this. And I can't imagine anything like that going on in our congregation. Well, in our society, I can't imagine anything like that. But I know, I've been told of cases in the rabbi in Los Angeles. Who have been engaged by the federation there,
to he because I have a beautiful problem. So that is demon. And he tells me, he said, don't think that it's not a life introduction. It's kind of like a person. And this is the old subject that I've spoken to you about, that you build a society. And in a society we get all kinds of people. All kinds of people. But because I was dealing with one thing at a time, so it's worthwhile concentrating on the one thing. But the husband will be only too happy if it went under the question of that to the woman when I was. Now to move that to someone told me from the news media that the longest they can keep up on the subject of news media is 6 months. They do not go one day beyond 6 months because people lose interest. They are carrying a dead horse after that, you see. So, they're looking for now, look at what the Israel you will notice. Not speaking so much about Israel now. They come back again. But they can't keep it on all the same day. Alright, if you can still do something, might still be of some use. I've got the long story here. Excuse me, just one moment. Why doesn't the synagogue do anything about it? Why doesn't the community do anything? All these things could have gone into letters. There's so much that could have been written about it. Congratulating the offer of what they're doing. Please don't continue with this and think what it is. Is there nothing that can be done by Jewish law? All these things could have gone in just to say what it is. This is the third article that has told me today. In my column last week, I discussed the unfortunate case of Judith Edison Villalopian, who for over 5 years has been unable to obtain a gift from her husband, Walter Edison, of Amsterdam, the Netherlands. I noted that the Edison had appeared before the Goodest Rabbin in New York, a hearing was held, and the Pesach Din, a rabbinical court decision, issued ordering Mr. Edison to give his wife a gift. I also noted that two of the Gedolei Hador, leading Torah sages, had urged him to comply with the Pesach Din. I went on to identify the Torah sages as Agon Rav Eliezer Shach of Israel and Agon Rav Kreisler of Belgium. The column seems to have struck him. The Jewish press has received a letter from an Israeli lawyer, one Martin L. Katz of the law firm of Dr. Chaim Katz and Company, who claims in pertinent part the following. This office has been retained by Mr. Michael Arvidsson regarding an article entitled Chain that appeared in your newspaper of the 25th of August. The impression created by the article is that there is an uncontroverted decision of a birth deal requiring Mr. Edison to grant a gift to his wife. The purpose of the column as stated in its first paragraph is to identify those individuals who have not adhered to a decision of a birth deal. It is obvious that the attention is to hold said person up to ridicule in the Jewish community. Your choice of Mr. Edison as an example was a grievous mistake on your part. The accusation and the facts are just not true. The fact is that during and after the hearing held by the Goodes Rabbonim, my client objected to the manner in which the hearing was conducted and to the improper methods used to render the decision. As a result thereof, we requested that the Beth Din Tzedek of the Orthodox community in Jerusalem look into the matter and render a decision as to the validity of the decision of the Goodes Rabbonim. That's the Jerusalem court did investigate the matter, and after not receiving satisfactory responses to the question from a Goodes Rabbonim, rendered a decision requiring the parties to appear for a new and proper hearing and thereby nullified the first decision. Because of the ramifications of the two decisions, both Mr. Everton and his wife appeared before the Upper Court of Kahan Yeshurun, the Rav Shitz, to have it determined which of the decisions is binding. The decision, after hearing arguments from both sides, was that the decision of the Badats was a binding decision and that the decision of Agudas Rabbein was not enforceable. The reporter obviously misrepresented the facts and has caused my client irreparable harm. My client is not and is not flouting any decision of the Beit Din, but he is adhering to the last decision given in the presence of both parties. It is also a fact that no personal communication has been received by my client from neither Rabbi Kreisler nor Agudas Rabbi Shach. Your reporter either intentionally misrepresented the facts or failed to investigate the matter properly. The letter goes on to threaten all sorts of dire consequences if the Jewish police does not correct the record stating the facts as they actually exist. Now comes the Jewish press. The Jewish press says, what chutzpah? And leave aside for the moment the fact that the evidences have been civilly divorced and that there is no possibility of reconciliation. Also leave aside for the moment the fact that both parties have agreed to abide by the ruling of the Agudas Rabbein. I am in possession of a letter from the Badats in which they explicitly reverse themselves and withdraw their suck. Now I've got the letter, so I'm going to read it to you in a moment. As to the claim that Mr. Aronson has not heard from neither Rav Shach nor Rav Kreisler, I have personally spoken to Rav Kreisler, and he confirms that he has repeatedly implored that Mr. Aronson give his wife a gift. In addition, I have in my possession a copy of a letter from a Rav Shach to Mr. Aronson, strongly urging him to give his wife a gift. I've got a copy of that letter. There is much more to be said about this matter. Mr. Aronson came to New York City to meet with his wife last summer, ostensibly to end the dispute. In the course of that visit, Mr. Anderson was charged with attacking a rabbi and his family with a noxious chemical. The rabbi was attempting to persuade Mr. Anderson to give a gift to his wife. Mr. Aronson was arrested and the case never finally adjudicated against Mr. Aronson was adjourned in contemplation of dismissal, which is a legal device through which criminal charges are dropped. If a person stays out of trouble with the law for a period of 6 months, and there is still more, that because of space constraints we will leave it for another column. Next week, we will publish the letters from Rav Shach and the Dutch. Now,
what is going on?
Now, I am called today from New York that I will not publish this next week because the lawyer has asked to meet personally. He will come over personally to the Jewish press. Please don't print anything more. This is September the 1st. I tried long before saying an issue of Judas. And in South Africa, we got a tremendous way with this. But the way we worked it there was, again, it's a very cohesive community. The way we worked it was, first of all, moral pressure. That didn't help. Communal pressure, social pressure. These people were ostracized. That didn't help. Then we went to the businesses. Then we called the businesses and we said, you got it. Only happened that we were able to get it through. You can't do a thing like that. So what can you say? What can you say in the Ketubah? that it's no marriage if he doesn't give a gift in the marriage because what can you say? And if you say they try to certain things, but it can't work. And what you say? That you undertake in the Kasuba to give a gift?
So what can you do if I refuse to do it? So what can you do?
I've got the copy of Rav Shach. This is the original, and in case it would be difficult to read his handwriting, he got it typed, and he signed the typed copy too. And this is the letter from the Beit Din, signed by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They write as follows. They said, concerning that which we have written in connection with the dispute between Mecca Arbison of Holland and his wife Yehudis, after that we have heard the details of the matter from the great rabbis, Rabbi Kleinwert of Antwerp and Rabbi Levy of Zurich, and in especially what we heard about the children, that according to their opinion, it would be absolutely wrong that they should be with the husband in Holland, therefore we have found it necessary to make it known that we have withdrawn ourselves from this case and now ourselves to this tabernacle of peace. So you've got five of them, and then the head of the Beit Din, Rabbi Weiss, whom I know personally, he died month or two ago.
He doesn't know, don't
you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless he died, so that is that. So these are the documents, you see.
Suppose that after all, maybe someone who has access to a copy machine could copy this particular article. This has got a lot of information on it, because it sounds like they're not going to reprint this, they're not going to add, but if we can quote it and stick it in the paper somehow.
Very good.
The 25th
is, as promised, this column will necessarily be precisely identify those individuals who have not adhered to a Pesach Din. As our first illustration, I've chosen the evidence in the case of El Sudan and California, because the personalities involved are examples how even prominent families are not immune from the Aguna problem. Jean Verlopian of a distinguished biblical family, married Mr. Anderson of Anderson in 75. The Anderson family has been active in the Dutch Jewish community for many years. After a number of years of Anderson difficulties, you did not compare to these. Somebody can post them and get them copied, which would be...
Could do this and
maybe it surely has to be remembered.
If he doesn't, I'll pick them up. Whoever can, if everyone can get it, if they're going to come back, whoever can, maybe go to Sophia's house or the public. This could be a lot to go on. And if we could, if we can in a letter, quote these articles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is what you said here, and I'd like to comment on that. I think that'll be the most effective. Because we need to repeat what they said about Mr. Anderson. And I think that needs to be repeated and repeated. We went through more than 6 months, you know, just a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you guys, I've been on questions.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
This is August 25th and the next one is September 1st. They're very short and not
Thank you.